came across this article. It said, many parents wish they could ensure that their children behave according to their family values and rules when they are outside the home. While it's a common wish, know that it's not necessarily realistic. Your children will encounter different rules and different levels of acceptable behavior once they leave your home, whether it's at school or if it happens when they leave the nest for good. The fact is, it's not possible or healthy to have your child under your control at all times. And although it's difficult for many parents to come to terms with this, there is a limit to how much you can enforce. After all, your child will make their own choices, and they are ultimately responsible for their own behavior. This doesn't mean that you're powerless, however. No, that's because you can build strong character into your children so they'll make wise decisions about their behavior when they're not around you. I want to talk some about that. I guess the dirty little secret is, no, you can't control your kids. But what you can do is you can help them put on the inside of themselves the strength and the skills that they need, the character and the skills that they need in order to allow them to control themselves. As our founding fathers so wisely put it, they said that you cannot have a lawful society unless the people in that society have a strong moral fiber. In other words, unless they have a sense of law in their own hearts. They said it's not possible to have enough laws to make people law-abiding, because this is the common misconception that people have. Laws are not there to make people do what's right. Laws are there to set the standards of society so when people don't do what's right, when they break those standards, we can do something about that. We can get rid of them, move them out of the society so they're not disturbing us. And the problem is that in our society today, a lot of folks, their only consideration is, what can I get by with? What can I do and not get caught? You know, they have no moral fiber down on the inside of them that causes them to want to do what's right. How do you build children so that they'll do what's right when they're faced with difficult situations? Turn to Deuteronomy 6. There are a lot of parents in our country, in the world today, that don't understand this concept. And the concept is that parents, you are responsible for the training of your children. The school is not responsible. The government is certainly not responsible. The church is not responsible for the education and the training of your children. You parents are. Now, you may delegate some of that responsibility, for instance, to a public school or a private school or to the church Sunday school or whatever. But Deuteronomy 6, starting in verse 4, the great Shema, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is united. And you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your might. And these words which I have commanded you today shall be on your heart." See, that's the concept of a law written on your heart or inside of you. "And you will teach them diligently to your sons, and you shall talk to them when they sit in the house, and when they walk by the way, and when they lie down, and when they rise up." That's kind of a continual sort of thing, isn't it? "And you'll bind them as a sign on your hand, and they'll be on your frontals." Those were pieces that hung off of their clothing. "And they'll be on your forehead, and you shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." And I mean, the concept here is that the parents take a very active role in training their children in how they should grow up. I think that parents have three primary roles. And the first one is to provide for your children and to protect them long enough that they can leave home. Now, a lot of parents just kind of stop there. You know, if I can just get them to where they're 18 and they haven't got pregnant or shot nobody yet, and I can kick them out, then I'm okay. I have done my job. Well, you know, yes, we are to protect them and we're to provide for them until they can leave home. But that's just the foundation. That's sort of just the first given. The second thing we do is we help our kids develop problem-solving and conflict resolution skills. And I don't want to talk psychobabble here, but we do have to teach our kids how to learn to accept that dreaded word, no. They need good examples, and they need training on what to do when things just don't go their way, when they don't get what they wanted, they don't get what they expected. And if you parents don't handle getting your way, guess what? Your kids aren't going to learn how to handle not getting their way. when they want to play with a sibling's toy, for instance, suggest to them that maybe there's something else that they could play with that would be just as much fun. In other words, teach them how to distract themselves from what they wanted originally. When they burst into the room, interrupting the adults that are having a conversation, and, you know, you tell them, just a minute, the adults are talking, and what do? They just continue to talk and continue to insist and pull and mommy, mommy, daddy, daddy. When they do that, don't just holler at them and shoo them away. Show them how to be patient. Teach them. Suggest that they go get a glass of water, that they go get a snack, that they sit there and color for just a minute. I mean, give them some mental tools that will help them learn how to become patient, how to accept frustration, those kind of things. Teach them a skill set. Of course, you may have to teach them this skill set about not interrupting a few hundred times, but that's okay. You just got to stay with it, okay? Teach them about what to do when they don't get what they want. You know, help suggest ways to deal with frustration. And I'm talking about ways other than how mommy and daddy might be dealing with it. You know, like cussing, throwing things, hollering, screaming. Those kids, you don't want to teach them those kind of things, okay? So that's one thing. We got to provide for them, protect them. We've got to help give them skills and what they need to be able to be adults that can actually survive in life. And then the third thing, which is the primary thing I want to get to today, is we want to help them develop a strong moral character. We want to teach them to do what's right because it's right. We want to teach them to know what right is. And we want to teach them to have a drive down on the inside of themselves to do what's right, where they'll want to do what's right. We were at Deacon Mac's birthday party yesterday, and Garen was there, of course, and some little boy threw a rock at Garen. And so Garen got a stick and threw it at this little boy. And so, of course, Travis says, Garen, come here. Garen, we don't throw sticks. See, what he was doing was saying, the standard of our family is we don't pick up sticks and hit other kids with it. And, of course, what was Garen's first response? Well, but he threw a rock at me first. See, and so Travis explains, Garen, you have to do what's right. You have to do what the family moral code says, even when other people are not doing what's right. You have to do what's right because it's right. And in order to get children to the place that they can have this strong moral foundation on the inside of them, the first place that you start in the family is, of course, with the parents. The firm foundation of a family is two loving parents. The children are not, I know this is going to surprise you girls, the children are not the most important part of the family. The parents are. When you, as a parent, are 85 years old, who are you going to be living with? You going to be living with Joyce? Yeah, you hope not. No, man, you're going to be living with Lawrence, of course. That's right. We men seem to have a pretty easy time of this. It's easy for us to see the kids as they're going to come, and they're going to go, and they're just here for a while, and that's okay. Mommies, on the other hand, sometimes tend to think the family is all about the children and only the children, and especially in a situation, a broken home situation, where there's been a divorce. You know, 150 years ago, there weren't many divorces. You know why? Because 150 years ago, when a woman said, I want to leave this man, the judge said, okay, bye. You don't have any money, and you can't have the kids. And so guess what? Most of the men made sure that the women didn't want to leave because they didn't want to be left with the kids, and the women made sure that they'd put up with the jerk and try to learn to live with him because they wanted those kids. Now, maybe if us men carried those kids for 9 months in our belly and then birthed them in pain and all this kind of stuff, maybe we'd be a little more attached to them ourselves. But I think God has made this so that we men can add a little balance in the family and say, look, Mom, they're not the most important thing. And what happens sometimes in a broken home situation is the first husband leaves, the biological father leaves, another husband comes along, but to the mom, the kids are the most important thing. And this guy is just sort of a roommate, you know. And if that's where they stay, the family's going to have a problem. It's not ever going to work because the family has to be based on this strong foundation of a husband and wife. And that's where you start. The husband and wife have to come to agreement. They have to be in agreement about how the children are raised. They have to be the ones in charge of the children. They have to be the ones that are setting the family values. And you know, they're not just there for the entertainment of the children, or as you girls would think, for the consternation of the children. That's not their job. They're not there just to make you miserable. I watched a family one time. They had a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. And the guy had gotten a job offer in another city. And honest to goodness, they set the 3-year-old and the 5-year-old down and said, "What do you guys want to do? Do you think Daddy should take this new job?" Which paid a lot more, is a much better job. You know, 3- and 5-year-olds, you may let them know what you're doing. They don't have a part of the decision-making process. Have you ever watched the Super Nanny show where the kids are running the house and it's a disaster? You know, there's 2 4-year-olds or whatever it is. And I mean, it is just a madhouse. It's the inmates running the asylum. And, of course, Super Nanny has to come in and say, "Whoa, hold it here. You parents, you're the adults in here. You're the ones that set the standards of the house. You set the goals. You set the direction. You set the values. You're the one that has to not only say how things are going to be in this family, but then you have not only the privilege but also the duty to enforce those standards. You have to make sure that that's how things work in the family, however you said they're supposed to work." Parents do more by their example and their actions to instill a deep moral fiber in their children than any other thing they can do. And expecting your children to follow the moral code of the family no matter what is the next most important thing you can do for your family, to build strong children. The worst thing you can do is set standards and then always make excuses for the kids as to why they're not living up to those standards. That's not going to help them. They will not get strong because of that. No excuses. This is just how our family is. This is what it means to be part of this family. Take that attitude. Let's talk some about building this moral fiber. So, Mom and Dad, you're setting standards, you're living the standards in front of the kids, you're expecting your children to live by the standards no matter what. How can you communicate these standards effectively to your children? Well, the wooden spoon is part of the enforcement, yeah. What I'm going to suggest is one way that you can communicate these moral standards of the family to the children is through contracts. That's really probably not the right word. Maybe a better word would be an agreement or a covenant. That's probably the best word. It's a document that you create that lists your family standards, and it has a place at the bottom for everyone in the family to sign it. Now, maybe parents, you do that with the children, or maybe you come up with the beginning and then you get some input from the children. Some folks just say, "Well, this is how it's going to be," and the kids don't get any input, but they're expected to sign off on it. You may have different covenants for different stages of the family and different times. When all the kids are 6 and under, the list of family standards is going to look a lot different than it does when the kids are teenagers. The 6 and under standards is not going to include no sexting to your friends, for instance. Maybe you write out a chastity pledge with each child, and it's a different pledge as they become teenagers. Maybe you have a set of family values, and then maybe you have a set of manners. So, you know, you may have different things. Let me give you some examples of how these might work, okay? And I'm not suggesting that you do these exactly, but let me just kind of get some creative juices flowing, okay? Are y'all familiar with YWAM, Youth with a Mission? It's about a 20-year-old organization that sends teenagers out all over the world doing missionary work. The family that started that is the Luce family, L-U-C-E. We read an excerpt from an article about them in doing this. When the children were very young, the couple they have 3 kids, and now they're 19, 16, and 14 or something like that. When the children were very young, the couple created a list of core values and gathered the family together to discuss what they call the character of the Luce family. The poster-sized document was written in calligraphy to resemble the U.S. Constitution and included a place for each member of the family to sign his or her name. The kids thought they were getting a new toy or pony or something, but when Ron and Katie unveiled the new document, they explained to their kids what each value meant. And let me read to you. They had 4 values. The first one was honor, and that meant that each of us shall learn to control ourselves in a way that is holy and honorable. Honor. Each of us should learn to control ourselves in a way that is holy and honorable. And then they had a scripture reference, 1 Thessalonians 4:4. I think this is crucial that whatever standards you have, as much as is humanly possible, you have scripture references with them. Now, if you do a list of manners, you may not have a scripture reference for every manner, okay? As my dad would say, don't chew with your mouth full and don't talk with your mouth open, you know. Yeah, of course it was the other way around. But you may not have scriptures for that. But it's important to make sure that our children understand that our foundation for our moral standards is the Word of God. It's not just something we make up. The next one is respect. And they said, show proper respect to everyone. That was how they listed it on their document, 1 Peter 2 and 17. The next one was honesty. Teach me your way, O Lord, and I will walk in your truth. That comes out of Psalm 86, 11. I might use the word integrity instead of honesty, because integrity encompasses a lot of things other than honesty. But this is what they did. And the last family value was responsibility. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord and not for men, Colossians 3, 23. That helps them to develop a strong work ethic, of course. Let me read you something not totally related here, but it's interesting. Growing up in a home free of negative cultural influences meant that the Luce family could not own cell phones or iPods, have televisions in their bedrooms, or listen to music just whenever they wanted to until they were older. But Charity, the oldest in the family, who is a student at ORU, says she and her siblings are better for it today. It wasn't always easy, but my parents would always listen to what we had to say, and we have a strong relationship because of it. Okay, so that's one example. What kind of things might you add to their list? Let's see, their list was honor, respect, honesty, and responsibility. What might you add for your family values? What about charity, concept of being generous, giving to others? What about humility? I think that's an important character trait. Politeness, that's exactly right. Yeah. Well, you might use the scout laws are great places to start. The various scouting groups, Awanas groups, things like that. They have great moral statements that are good places to start, but you want to make it for your family. Well, and so you find some way to make sure that that's one of the family values you're talking about, no matter how hard it is. Matter of fact, with Sandy, we would go through this more than once, and she got to where she wanted to live by this. The idea was that you do what's right because it's right or die trying. And as a matter of fact, if it didn't cause permanent, visible, physical, bodily harm, it was worth going through in order to do the right thing. So even if it's hard, you do it. What about honor? This concept of honor, they just said a short thing about it. But you know, the idea of teaching children to have honor and to live to honor and to do what's right because that's what honors God and honors their parents. A lot of people don't have any honor at all. What about courage? This may go back to doing what's right even though it's hard, or just to live a godly life. Hey, this is how our family is. We live a godly life. Yeah, courteous. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. All the scout things apply. That's right. See, I mean, you could take that and you could say, this is the foundation for our family values. Start from there, get some scriptures, you know. Boldness, absolutely. Write it out. Have a family ceremony. We're going to agree to this. How about a list of good manners? Of course, that might vary with the venue, right? You got one set of manners at home, maybe that's some of the best, and it's the same for when you eat out. But what about manners at school? Maybe it's not quite the same, but you have a list of manners, you know. For teens, you might need to help them set standards they follow with their friends, like what's acceptable behavior when you're dating. Now, of course, if you're not going to let your kids date until they're 25, well, then it's a little bit easier to set those standards. It's okay to write those things down. One of the standards that we set with Sandy when she first started driving was you can't have more than two other kids in the car with you. And you can't be in the car when the driver is doing drugs or alcohol. And she agreed to those things. I mean, we agreed to this. These are family values. This is just the way we do and the way we live. Matter of fact, one of the things we did when Sandy was, I think, I was 14 or 15, we didn't do a document. A lot of people will do a chastity document and a chastity ring when kids turn teenagers. And with Sandy, what we did was I bought a nice ring, looked like an engagement ring. And so we had a conversation. Sandy and I were talking about this. She remembers it. Yeah, we were sitting in the living room and we talked together about what this meant and we prayed together. And the idea was, I, your father, am going to put this ring on your left ring finger where a wedding ring will go. And you're going to agree to remain chaste until I take that ring off so your husband can put your wedding ring on that finger. And she wanted to do that. Well, I was talking to her about it. I said, so what did that mean to you? How did that make you feel? Did you resent that? Did you resent us? No, I didn't resent it at all. Well, how did it make you feel? She said, it's kind of hard to explain because, you know, it wasn't the ring that kept me chaste until I got married. She said, it was that moral code down on the inside of me that you and Mom helped put there. But that was that ring and that ceremony and that praying together was one of the symbols that we did, one of the things we did to establish this is what the Whit family values are. This is how we live in our family. And as a matter of fact, let me suggest to you that you build esprit de corps in your family. In other words, that you set the values for everybody and you use phrases like, these are the Smith family values. Our family doesn't do that when somebody does something that's against the family standards. Or when somebody does, or you're suggesting, our family always does that. You know, if you're going to show kindness to somebody, this is how our family is. The Smith family always works together to make a home where everybody can enjoy. In the Smith family, we don't lie to each other. You know, it's a family thing. The kids will start holding each other accountable to that, too. As a matter of fact, they'll start holding the parents accountable to that. Just tell them, I'm not home, when they answer the phone. I'm not going to lie for you, see? And that's what you want to hear, man. That's the way we are in our family. Since you're part of the Smith family, you get some of the Smith's money to spend. That's called an allowance. As part of the Smith family, you're expected to respect all adults around you. Put it in those kind of terms. The Smith family doesn't have food fights at the dinner table. In other words, you're a bad kid if you have a food fight. The Smith family isn't like that. We're just not like that. Make it something that they can be proud of. Make it something that they're a part of. They're a part of something bigger than themselves. You know, build on the pride of being part of a family. Let your children know that they're part of something bigger than they are. Praise them when they live up to the family values, especially when it's hard or painful for them to do that. Explain how living together with these values shows how you love each other and how sad it is when families don't have family values. It's even more sad when the family members don't love each other enough to hold each other accountable to a set of family values. Kids understand that concept in a hurry that we have family values and we hold each other to those family values to make our family a better family and a better place to live. And it's because we love each other. They understand that. You're not pouring something on them. You're making them a part of something that's important. Ben Franklin had 13 virtues. When he was in his late 20s, he came up with this list. And he would work on one virtue for a week, and then he'd move on to the next one for a week. And he would do that for 13 weeks, and then he'd start all over again. He had a little book he carried around with him where he would grade himself on how well he was doing in his quest. Let me read them to you just real quick. Temperance. Eat not to dullness, drink not to elation. Order. Let all of your things have their places. Let each part of your business have its time. In other words, don't let the business run your life. Resolution. Resolve to perform what you ought, perform without fail what you resolve. These are good characteristics, good family values. Frugality, make no expense but to do good to others or yourself. That is, waste nothing. I can remember having teenagers in the house at various times where, you know, sometimes a bottle of shampoo for them wouldn't last more than a couple of weeks. They needed to learn frugality. Yeah, moderation. Avoid extremes. Forbear resenting injuries so much as you think they deserve. Industry. Lose no time. Be always employed in something useful. Cut off all unnecessary actions. You can Google Ben Franklin 13 Virtues and you'll be able to find this list if you're interested in this sort of thing. Cleanliness. Like you were talking about a while ago, Travis. tolerate no uncleanness in body, clothes, or habitation, and I would say mind as well. Tranquility, be not disturbed at trifles or at accidents, common or uncommon. Then he had five social virtues. Silence. To who? This is just for the men. Silence. Speak not but what may benefit others or yourself. Avoid trifling conversation. Sincerity, use no hurtful deceit. Think innocently and justly, and if you speak, speak accordingly. Justice, wrong none by doing injuries or omitting the benefits that are your duty. How many people today could not possibly care less who they do wrong as long as it somehow brings a benefit to them? See, there's no honor in that. This is back to teaching kids to have honor. Chastity, rarely use vinery. He's talking about wine or adult beverages. Rarely use adult beverages but for health or offspring, never to dullness, weakness, or the injury of your own or others' peace or reputation. And his last was humility, imitate Jesus. I think that we have a society-wide misconception about life. We portray life as all about me and my own self-fulfillment and what am I going to do. Look at TV shows, movies. Almost none of them show a normal family situation. They show bachelors, single people, people living together, single moms with children, single dads with children, but almost never a normal family life. Our teenagers spend more of their energy thinking about getting away from home and being free and going to college and do what they want, living footloose and fancy free. I mean, they want to be a single person on their own. But the truth is that young folks, as they're growing up, they're not single and out away from a family more than a year or two, five at the most. And then they marry and they're right back in the middle of a family situation. As a matter of fact, after a kid or two, it's like, oh man, this is just like being at home, only now I'm the one responsible. This is a drag, you know. But all this time and energy they spent on, I want to get out from under that family thumb and get out on my own and do what I want to do. And, you know, all they've learned how to do is be single and have a career, but they haven't learned the most fundamental of lifestyles, and that is how to be part of a family and like it and enjoy being part of a family. We're really busy teaching our kids how to get good grades so they can go to college and maybe become a doctor or engineer or a nurse, and we're not teaching them how to spend most of their life as a family and part of a family. Even if they go to school and become a surgeon, they're still going to spend more time as part of a family than they'll ever spend practicing medicine. I mean, we spend 95 to 100% of our time as part of a family. It's incumbent upon we parents to teach our children not just how to be responsible, productive members of a family. We need to teach them how to enjoy it. We need to teach them how to find their fulfillment as part of a family, not in their PhD, not in their career, but in being a family.